And today we are hosting with us Netta Schramm. So Netta is an advanced PhD candidate focused on modern Jewish thought at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And recently she was also a Minerva Fellow at the Center for Israel Studies at Ludwig Maximilians University in Munich. And she is the founder and current head of an interdisciplinary research group titled I'm Not a Text. And her research, she employs performance theory and narratology to read audiovisual archive material of modern and contemporary Jewish thinkers. And she has published in Pardes, CCAR, and Musa. And today she is going to talk about Ovadia Yosef and Ishai Leibovich. So I'll just remind all of us that the format is 45 minutes of presentation and 45 minutes of Q&A, after which both Netta and I will be running to catch our plane. So we will be punctual today. Without further ado...
Let's make sure I'm silenced. That would have been a little embarrassing. How about this? Okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for coming, and I thank Elisa and Professor Yadgar for having me. Today I want to talk about the Zionism of Ishai Leibovich and Ovadia Yosef, and I'm going to have three different levels of argumentation going on here. So first, I'm going to be drawing parallels between Ishai Leibovich's and Ovadia Yosef's Zionism. That's going to be the main topic. But except for that, I'm going to be talking about using the right kinds of resources. I'm going to be using audiovisual materials and not just texts. And the third thing I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be arguing with other researchers. You know, this is academia. And I'm going to say that what they've said about each of their Zionisms is problematic because I have these other texts, these audiovisual texts that prove otherwise. So that's the three levels of argumentation that are going to be happening here today. Okay, so I want to begin with talking about this is what I just said, these are the 3 points. Okay. I want to talk about my two protagonists for today. I made a little graph. On the one side, we have religious anti-Zionism. And on the other side, we have religious Zionism. And in the middle, we have two figures who are very, very different, but are both of them in between these two positions. So one of them, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, was born in 1920 in Iraq, in Baghdad. And he immigrated to Israel when he was like 4 years old. He lived in Jerusalem in the old part. He was educated in the elite Sephardi yeshiva of Porat Yosef. He was obviously a genius. Everybody could see it from a very young age. And he became a leading halachist of the 20th century, moving from position of rabbinical magistrate on the local, different cities, and then finally being the chief rabbi of Israel for 10 years. And after he was done with that, he became the political leader that made him a household name. He was the leader of the political party Shas, which was the Haredi Sephardi movement in Israel, that at its height had 19 mandates and really changed the politics in Israel to this day, really changed something fundamental. Next to him, I have Ovadia Yosef. He was born in 1903 in Riga.
Ishayahu
Leibovich, excuse me. He was born in 1903 in Riga to a family who came from a, I would say, modernized orthodoxy. When I say modernized, I mean that he received a secular, very good secular education. At home, his parents brought tutors. And then because of the World War I, the whole family fled to Berlin. He received 2 PhDs and one in chemistry and the other one in medicine. And about the age of 27, he became politically active in the Zionist movement of the Eastern European Jews in Germany. As I said, his family was modern Orthodox already back in Riga, and the Zionism in the house was already there. It wasn't like something, he wasn't going against his family on this front. In 1935, he immigrated to Israel. He got a professorship at the Hebrew University, where he worked literally until he died. But that's not what he's known for. What he's known for is for his political, very strong political critique of Israel. Israel's policy regarding this, the occupied territories and many, many, many other things in Israel. So he's very known till this day. And both of these figures thought that Judaism is about law, it's about halakha, it's about leading a life. Being Jewish is leading a life of praxis, and the praxis is halachic praxis. But except for this poor position, they had very divergent ideas about what are we doing about this modern age, what are we doing about secular education. There, they were totally different. I mean, even though they both lived in the same neighborhood in Jerusalem, they never met sociologically. Okay? But there's one very core thing that unites them, and that's the fact that they were media intellectuals. Already in the 1970s, both of them had a line to Israeli radio. Ovad Yosef was giving a weekly talk about halacha on the radio, and Yishayahu Leibovitch was giving weekly lectures on religious matters. And as technology became easier, audiovisual technology became more cheap and easy, both of them had a media presence. Ovad Yosef, it would be like cassettes being handed out for free in the streets, getting people back to return to their roots and re-embrace Judaism. And for Leibovitch, it was his students recording him. And so both of them were not only public intellectuals in the fact that they wrote or made legal decisions, but the fact that they really reached a huge public. And of course, they actually traveled across the country daily, giving lectures everywhere, and also had a permanent cathedral, where they would sit. So one of them was a specific shul, the Yazdin, and the other one was a specific shul, Yeshurun, like two synagogues where you could find them at least once or twice a week, giving an open lecture to whoever wants to come. So in these respects, in these aspects, there's something in common, although, as I said, sociologically, they're very different. So why did I put them between national Zionism and religious anti-Zionism? Religious anti-Zionism is a position that thinks that Zionism is going against the will of God, because God is going to decide when the Jews should be coming back to Israel and rebuilding themselves as a political entity, not humans. This is not up to humans. So anything that, not only are the Zionists literally secular and horrible people because of their secularism, they're also going against God because God didn't say, oh, fine, they didn't get his consent. Now, National Zionism, on the other side, thinks that Zionism, the success of the building of the nation, proves that God wants this to happen, and this is the beginning of the Messianic age, and all of Judaism should be thinking itself anew because, Messiah is on he's on the gate. We just don't see him yet, but he's really here. And they couldn't accept either of these positions. But in terms of their milieu, where were they more connected? I put them in this order for a reason. Yishayahu Leibovitch, at least it's claimed, came from a national Zionism when he was younger. And then when he came to Israel, he moved saying he right and left doesn't really mean much, but he moved closer to Haredi ideas against Zionism. That's what some researchers say. And Ovad Yosef came from the more Haredi anti-Zionist positions. And then as his career progressed, he moved closer to a position that does embrace the Zionist state and this ideal of, human originating, humans starting this process. I don't agree with this idea of the direction they move, but I do agree that they're between these two poles. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. And that's the reason I can even compare these two people. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about methodology, which was actually here. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So I think that, as I explained, these people had very, very heavy media presence. And we have thousands of hours of them speaking to the public. With Ovadia Yosef, he wrote legal halachic writings that are not something a layperson can read. It's like you can't read the legal writing if you're not a trained legalist. Same thing, Ovadia Yosef's writing was not meant for the public. When he wanted to engage with the public, he would have them come to his synagogue and he would talk to them. So if you want to understand his idea, how he's navigating the world, most researchers say, well, go see what he's writing. What are his decisions regarding, should you pray for the state of Israel or not? Like, he wrote his ideas there, but he also expressed them in public. And this is not less important, as some researchers say, you know, you're not getting the true about yourself if you listen to what it's actually saying. And also used is sometimes used in inflammatory rhetoric, so it's better to just, let's ignore this, you know, problematic setting where he sometimes curses people and says nasty things, and just look at his pure erudite works. I don't agree with that. And with Obadiah, with Yeshayahu Leibovitz, it's even more crazy, because the books that people always quote from are all built on lectures he gave. So he would give a lecture, and then they would write it up and print it in a book. But we actually have the recording of the original. Okay, researchers don't, like, there's YouTube. Let's see what happened, right? So that's my, what I'm doing. And except for that, I think that when you listen to them speak and you watch them speak, then you can see their performative poetics. You can see how they're, you can use more literary tools to see what's happening, and not only what are they saying, but how are they saying it. So that's my methodological contribution to this topic. So now we're going to talk about Yeshayahu Leibovitz a little bit. What did people say before me? So there's this very common idea that Yeshayahu Leibovitz had two phases. When he was younger, he was more pro-Zionist. He was really, really part of the National Zionist movement. And then he came to Israel. He tried to make it work. He failed. And then he totally changed his view. He said that the state and the and religion and state should be disconnected. The connection must be severed. The Jewish halakha will never be implemented in a Jewish state. So we've got to just battle the state instead of be part of it. And not, we are part of the state in terms of the structural contribution, but we're not in it in terms of trying to make it a Jewish place, a Jewish space. So they say he used to be part of National Zionism, and he was then no longer past 50, 53 or something. He's no longer part of that world. He moved towards the more Haredi ideas. And then you can find in different research and not so research, not so academic publications that some people think or call him anti-Zionist, and some people call him post-Zionist. When people say anti-Zionist about Yeshayahu Leibovitz, they're thinking about him as one of the Haredi society. Like he thinks that the Zionism, the whole Zionist project is a sin against God. Or at least it's just a sin. Forget about it, God. It's a sin. And they quote different things. They quote how Haredi newspapers sometimes took him up and things like that. And then there's another kind of idea, because in the 1980s he was very opposed to the First Lebanon War, and he was spearheading a group of young men who were not willing to enroll in the IDF and take part of the war. So then, and they were part of a post-Zionist, post-colonial movement. So they thought that this 90-year-old man, 80-year-old man who's with them is one of them. But the post-Zionists were very secular. And he was extremely religious. So that's really a problematic suggestion to say that Yeshayahu Leibovitz is post-Zionist when you think about it as part of that 1990s movement. I disagree with those two interpretations, and I'm going to try to show my neutral, sardonic version now. So, I have two different quotes from Yeshayahu Leibovitz, where he's going to give, his battle is going to be against National Zionism, against the idea that Judaism is going to be changed because Messiah is, you know, he's here. That's his battle. That's what he can't stand. He's not against Zionism, he's against Zionist theology. Even if the Zionist theology is secular, it doesn't matter. Once it has a meta-historical bent to it, he can't stand it. So he's going to give this very, very ironic definition to Zionism, where he's going to say that, yeah, he loves Zionism. Zionism is great. It's a great infrastructure. And why does he like it? Because we're fed up of being ruled by goyim. He doesn't say Gentiles. He's going to say this in English. He's not going to say Gentiles. He's going to say goyim. Like you would say in the shtetl, like it might be a derogatory way for saying non-Jews, but it's also the inner way of, it's the word of the inside group. And also, I checked a couple of Yiddish dictionaries. Goyim is also what you taught, how you would say stupid Jews. Like, goyim, number one, non-Jews. Goyim, number two, stupid Jews. So it's like, this is like an inner And he says this. He says, we're fed up of being ruled by Goy. And how was this interpreted? We're going to watch it one moment. How was this interpreted? Leibovitz is a Zionist without Zion. Leibovitz is anti-Zionist. Leibovitz is post-Zionist. All kinds of things. So let's just watch it. And then we'll see where we're going from here.
אני יודע שהיום זה מיעוט במדינת ישראל של אנשים שלא ניתן לבוא במדינת ישראל. שמעולם, מראיתי על דתי, אני ציוני מילדותי ניתן לומר כך. מראיתי על דתי דבר אחר, אלא מדינת ישראל היא המנגנון והמכשיר והכלי לשחרר אותנו משיבות מלכויות. לפני זמן מועט, במקרה הייתה לי שיחה ממושכת עם עיתונאי חשוב מחוץ לארץ, לא יהודי. הוא הציג לי את השאלה, what meaning of Zionism? מהי משמעות הציונות? הוא סיפר לי שהציג את השאלה הזאת כבר לאנשים שונים, ציון עיתונאי שלנו קוראים להם אישים. על פי שאני לעולם להבינות אם היה זה בין אנשים ובין אישים. ובכן הוא הציג את השאלה הזאת לאישים שונים וקיבל מהם תשובות שונות, לפי דעתי גם שונות, שלפי דבריו בלבלו אותו מאוד, אני נתתי לי קונפיוז, ואני אגיד עכשיו מה הייתה התשובה שאני נתתי לו. אני אמרתי, המשמעות של הציונות היא, we are fed up with being ruled by God.
Okay. So I have to tell you, I've went through like every academic publication that references this, and I found one that talked about this as an ironic invocation. Everybody else just took him at face value. Some people said it's a simple definition, some people said it's simplistic. But people here in this room were laughing, right? So it's not either simple or simplistic, it's performative. So using this as his definition to Zionism, people thought, okay, Yishai Leibovitz had a very limited view of Zionism. Zionism is only a structure. It has no merit except for being just a political organization that ensures a self-governance. But really, he's a Zionist without Zion. He's hardly a Zionist. All kinds of things like that. But I found him saying the same story, but changing the ending. This quote, he's speaking to an Israeli audience, and he's so angry with the prevalence of Zionist theology that he has to take his Zionism and make it very ironic and very limited, very sardonic. But when he's talking to a Jewish friend's historian, Pierre Vidal-Naquet, who sits with Leibovitz and says, don't you think that Zionism is post-colonialism? So Leibovitz totally changes his position. And what I will show you now, I think, proves that Leibovitz never really changed his affinity towards Zionism. He always thought about it as as something that doesn't have its own content. But when the people around him started giving Zionism a very theological, like adding theological content to something that should have been more technical, then he started saying these kinds of things. So let's see how he's speaking to Vidal-Naquet. And also, it's very important for me to show you that we get the response of Pierre Vidal-Naquet. And Pierre Vidal-Naquet says, I understand you. What he's going to say now is that Zionism allows the Jews to be responsible for their own faults and for their own problems. And this is a positive framing of Zionism versus the negative. We are just fed up, you know. That's a negative theology. Never going to get a positive theology.
Sometimes ago, I have been asked by a very prominent foreign journalist, Nobu, a member of the editorial staff of the London Times Group. We had here a long discussion, and he asked me, what is the value of political and economic the answer is easy. To have the right and opportunity to commit our own follies and our own crimes and to be responsible for them. Yes, Mr. Tanner. I totally understand the line.
Okay. So here he's misquoting. He always would say that history is the, of crimes and follies. He had this quote, I forgot, it's not Edward Gibbons and somebody else you always used to quote that he's paraphrasing here. And so what is Zionism? Zionism is to be responsible for our own crimes. That's not exactly a positive definition, but it's not as devoid of meaning as the previous one. And I think that when he's speaking to Pierre Vidal-Naquet, he's not afraid that Pierre Vidal-Naquet is going to think about Zionism in religious and messianic terms, so he can give this kind of answer, which he still believes in. But whenever he's talking to the Israeli public, he will never say this answer, because Israelis will take this as a love pat. And he wants to enrage the Israeli public. And this is very, very different from the regular Yeshayahu Leibovitz, which I haven't seen anybody who even paid attention to this kind of positive definition. And where is this story coming from? This London Times, guy, and he's repeating this twice, totally different stories. So I actually found in 1975, he gave a talk at Van Leer Institute but it was an hour and a half talk, and the whole hour and a half was about this event when this journalist came to him, and we have it like much, much longer version of the same story. And in this story, it's like a Socratic dialogue where Yeshayahu Leibovitz is being confronted with all the different kinds of and forms of Zionism. All the journalist is telling him, how about, a light upon the nations, and how about this, and how about that? And Yeshayahu Leibovitz says about everything that it's bad, and he explains why very, very, he gives a lot of details. And then in the end, his answer is, we're fed up of being ruled by goyim. After an hour and a half, that's what he has to say. We're fed up of being ruled by goyim. And so the little tiny part I brought about him, his other hidden answer, which is also ironic, I think proves that he hasn't changed his actual beliefs. It's only his trying to get rid of meta-historical, theological interpretations of Zionism. Now, I want to show that Ovadia Yosef did more or less the same thing. He did not like meta-historical theological interpretations of Zionism, but instead of being anti-metaphysics, he turned it into hyper-metaphysics. And I also want to show that he has his own version of we are fed up of being ruled by goyim, but it's a little different. So let's do a really big different, we're moving on, totally different guy. So Benjamin Brown said that Ovadia Yosef was a Zionist without Zionism because he was part of the Haredi milieu. He couldn't be a pro-Zionist for many, many reasons. First of all, they were secular, and he didn't like that. And many, many, many reasons. Also, like in the 50s, the way the Sephardi Jews, the Mizrahi Jews were treated was something that really made him very critical of the Jewish state. But on the other hand, there were some things that he did like about it, and that's what we're going to try and see today. I think that instead of saying Zionism without Zionism, I want to say sardonic Zionism or neutral Zionism. That's my take on it. Nissim Leon tried to talk about counter-nationalism. I don't have time to go into it. Also, it's good, but it's problematic. So what do I have to say? I'm going to start with this video. It's one of Ovadia Yosef would speak in his, this is from his old age. He would speak in his synagogue under his house. And sometimes there was an actual camera and you have the good recording of it. But this, it's with a cell phone. So I don't know if he knew that. I mean, he was recorded all the time. But there's another version of probably a year before where you see that the camera isn't shaking and he has a microphone, but he says something different. And this one, where there isn't, it's like somebody holding with someone, he's giving his version of we're fed up of being ruled by goyim. So let's hope this one works. He's going to talk about, just a little bit, there's a whole argument about are you allowed to, should you pray on the national on the Independence Day, should you say a certain extra prayer for the state of Israel, yes or no? And he says you shouldn't, but you can add a few psalms after the after the actual prayer is over. It's a big, big, big debate. Doesn't mean that he was Zionist. Doesn't mean he was anti-Zionist. The other Haredi rabbis wouldn't even consider answering this question, so that shows he's not a Zionist, but because he said... Okay, so this is what he's going to say. Why should we like the State of Israel? Why should we be happy about in during the Independence Day or not? So this is his answer.
Huh? תמיד זה לא יודעת לכל זה לא פה. השיר על השם כי גמר עליי. גם כן האדום. לא זה שיר. זה שיר אומר, חג עצמאות, בין לחג עצמאות. זה לא חג עצמאות. אנחנו חושבים על הכל דבר. זה שירנו, משנה יהודית. היה פה, המנדטורי, ולאנגלים, מה שמה, שרי ישראל. כל מי שעשה לו לארץ, זה שיכנס את זה סופר בקל, ולי זה לא ייכנס. ויש את פרוטקציות, וזה, וזה. כל איש שיהיה פה, כמו שלא צריך לראות. מי שאני אהיה בנדה יהודית, אם רק בשביל שבוא יהודי כמה שרוצים, זה יהיה. אבל האמת הוא, יש...
This is a hard translation, but let's try and get the parody here. So he's saying, why are we happy about the State of Israel? Because before that, in order to get into the Holy Land, the Jews were had to pass through a different government, a mandate, and they said you need a certificate, certificat, and if you don't have it, you can't get in. And there's protexia. I mean, you have to know somebody who knows somebody in the system, or you won't get in. And now the Jews can decide for themselves who can come in and who can leave the country. So that's good enough for us. Dayen. That's something you say on Passover. It means that God gave us something. He hasn't given us everything yet, but we say thank you for what he has given us. And what he has given us is a gift from God. So A, the state is something that God gave us. It can't be that it's against God's will and it exists, because then it wouldn't exist. And B, yeah, the country is not perfect. It's full of faults, but we're thankful for whatever it is we have. And what is it that we have? The goyim don't get to decide if I have a certificate or don't have a certificate. He himself could not return. He was in Cairo. He was serving there as a rabbinical magistrate, and he couldn't return because of things like this, right? So this is even a biographical note. He wanted to return to a city. He wanted to return to Jerusalem, and the British government said, no, you can't. Okay. And the tone, I don't know, some people were a little laughing here. The tone was parody. It was like a parody. It was like funny. It wasn't like serious. It was like, yeah. So what I was trying to show from this is that although what he's going to do now is he's going to make the State of Israel part of a huge story in which God is controlling everything. And it's going to be very, very, very hyper metaphysical to make Zionism just one little part of, you know, global Jewish history. Still, he has this, we just don't like the goyim deciding things for us. We want to, you know, be in charge of ourselves. And we like this self-responsibility thing. Yeah, we like that. But, you know, let's be a little silly about it. Let's be a little, you know, a little, it's a parodic, it's not parody, but it's a parodic mood, I would say. And the next source I wanted to bring, how am I with the time?
You're good. You have 15 minutes.
Great. Least, yeah. The next source I want to bring is a source I cannot use. And the reason I can't use it is because I do not have the recording. I don't even know what year this was said. Somebody quotes in a book something that obviously is an oral piece without giving any indication of time or date. And there are at least 4,000 hours of his recordings that I have that have been converted to MP3 or MP4, but there is I don't even have a way to begin to find this, and I don't want to use this because I don't know what was the intonation with which he used when he said this. Where was the stress? What was the joke? So they come to attack. They is obviously people who call him an anti-Zionist. They could be secular or they could be... in this case, it's either national Zionists, religious national Zionists, or secularists. So they come to attack. What is anti-Zionist? It's nonsense. It's a concept that they have in their hearts. I mean, anti-Zionists, that doesn't even exist. After all, I served 10 years as chief rabbi, a senior state position in the country. What are we good at? We pray for Zion, Jerusalem and its inhabitants, for Israel and for their students. This is not the correct text. I had a better one. Okay. But I don't know how to read this. When he says, what is anti-Zionist? Is he laughing at the idea of anti-Zionist? Is he using a voice to mock the concept? Or is he actually saying this in horror or disgust? Or is he insulted? I don't know how to read this text. And the two different options. A performer getting this text could make two very different performances using it. So I don't want to do anything with this text because I don't know how to read it. But I do have a text I do know how to read because I have a recording. And this recording shows us how he puts political events in the political, not only political, just historical events in Israeli history, in national Israeli history. He puts it on stage, and on this stage, there's world Jewish history, and there's the God who's, you know, navigating what's happening. And the secular president of the state of Israel, Menachem Begin, because he would invoke the name of God, that's why Saddam Hussein's nuclear bombs were destroyed by the Navy, by the Israeli army. Now, this is totally foreign to Haredi thinking, to think and to put everything that's happening in politics as part of God's plan. I mean, maybe today with the Israelization, it would be more common, but this in 1991, this was definitely not a regular position for Haredi people. And what am I trying to show here? If the whole history of Jewish people was this way, where God would, you know, move the chess pieces to help the Jews. So the fact that he's moving the chess pieces also now is nothing new. The state is just so the British won't get to decide who can come in and who can come out. But it hasn't changed Judaism. We still have our own agendas. You know, the Torah study and the whatever. That's what we do. And now we have another thing that helps us do it better. So by inflating the meta-historical implications of the state of Israel, is actually minimizing them. That's what I'm going to try now. So let's listen to him. It's kind of nice. Where is this? How do I do play without this here? Okay.
ועכשיו כל אומות העולם, כל אומות העולם, כמה טובים היהודים האלה. אז הגנוי עשו מאות מחדות, באיזו זכות באו, נכנסו לתחום האווירי שלהם, פרצצו להם כל מיני, עכשיו, אם היה כל גורעני וידו, כולם, משמיד אותם כולם. כמה צריכים לבוא לבדות לנו, באמת עכשיו הפסוק הזה הוא נכון. על ידו את השם כל גויים, שבחו כל העמים, כי גבר עליהם חדות. זכינו, פוסטנו להם את הגרעינים שלהם. לא היו אחרים, לא היה רגל ולא היה, לא היה שעדיין. כשתובע שמו, נתן מנחם בגין, נזכר על טוב,
מי שעשה את הדבר הזה, So, I think that the idea that you can compare Ovadia Yosef and Yisrael Leibovitch on the little comparison I offered today, we don't like Zionist theology, so let's either remove God from history or put him in history full-blown, is convincing. But from this piece, we also see that their attitudes towards nationalism in general is different. Ovadia Yosef has no problem with Jewish nationalism. It doesn't bother him at all. He has no problem with the Jewish uniqueness. That's fine with him. As a Haredi rabbi, he doesn't have any problem. He doesn't have a secular education. He doesn't have... it doesn't bother him at all. But we know that Yisrael Leibovitch was very, 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 very much against those kinds of claims. And he would say that Jews are not the chosen people, and that is, you know, a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. It's idolatry. So on that point, I have to say that that's a limit in the parallel I was showing here today. So if they were the same in terms of we're fed up of being ruled by goyim. Goyim for them is not the same thing. One of them sees goyim in a more traditional, particularistic way. Very traditional, I would say. Hyper-traditional, that's Rabbi Obadiah Yosef. And the other one sees goyim in a more, he wouldn't agree with it, but in a more humanistic. Being a Jew is about what you do, it's not about what you are. So that would be Obadiah Yosef. So I have to say that the parallel doesn't work all the way, obviously. They're very different people.
Hi, Rabbi.
Now, there was another text that I didn't bring, and I don't know if I should reflect on it a little bit, but I don't know. Maybe I should just leave it. Okay, I'll leave it now. So, if I have to summarize the two positions, I would say as follows: when I say that their Zionism is neutral, what I mean to say that they think of Zionism as a structure. That once the structure is understood as content, it is idolatry. It is that would be Ovadia. That would be Leibovich's way of phrasing it. Ovadia Yosef wouldn't call it idolatry, but he would call it, you know, a terrible, terrible mistake. And one that both of them would agree about this, that makes people change halakha and prioritize national things to religious things. Now, I should for this point, I really need to talk about the source I didn't put in here for watching. There's a very big in the news now about, are Jews allowed to go onto the Temple Mount? And guess what? Yishayahu Leibovich was against going up to the Temple Mount. Okay, he called the Western Wall the disco tell. You know, he was very anti. Holy sites and holy things in the world at all. But Ovadia Yosef was very much against going up to the Holy Mount for halachic reasons. He said, we don't know where you're allowed to stand, and you might be impure because we have impurities today that we cannot can't purify because we don't have the red heifer, all kinds of things like that. So that's why we shouldn't do it. And those who are going up to the Temple Mount, and this he was saying back in the 1990s, the reason they're doing it is to show the Arabs up on the mount, you know, they're trying to prove a point. But that has nothing to do with halakha. So they're willing to take a serious, serious religious, it's like a religious danger for something that has nothing to do with religion. So it's pointless, it's horrible, it's terrible. It's deforming the correct way a Jew should consider his actions. Is this a sin or is this not a sin? What you're trying to, you know, you think you'll do something politically, A, you won't, and B, you're going to sin for it. So he's absolutely against going up onto the Temple Mount. He's just, it's the aversion to this changing the criterion by which you rule halacha. And there were rabbis, and there are rabbis, who say that, yeah, of course you're allowed to go up to the Temple Mount. Because there are Arabs there, that makes it even more okay. But he goes through all the legal precedences and is just shocked that such a non-halachic idea can influence. Of course, he has a non-halachic idea that you shouldn't be, you know, that Zionism isn't a change in Judaism. So he also has a extra halachic idea guiding him. But he was very, very much opposed to it. So even though he wasn't like Yishayahu Leibovich claiming these things outspokenly, that Zionism and Zionist theology is changing the halakha, he actually thought that. And he had a lot to say against national Zionist rabbis who made all kinds of decisions that were totally against. In that respect, he's like other Haredi rabbis. Okay. So, what I tried to show, this is a sardonic part, is that they both tried to claim that Zionist theology is joke-making material. The way they would combat this idea, be it religious or secular theology, which I didn't have time to like needle down more, is that they would make jokes about it. Now, these jokes aren't always like a punchline, ha 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 kind of joke. It could just be in the tone, in the mood, in the framing of the situation. I mean, joke is a large word, but that's what we're trying to say. So then, Zionist theology, which is the basis for all Zionist ideology, I would say, the theological part, is joking thing, so we don't like it, so we're going to make jokes about it. And then we're going to do two things. One of two things. Either we're going to say God has nothing to do with Zionism. It's only about, you know, a structure. Or we're going to say, God has everything to do with Zionism. He does everything. But he does everything. He's done everything also before. And I have to add here that Ovadia Yosef said that the reason Palestine, Mandate Palestine, was not conquered in the Second World War was because he and a group of rabbis went to the Western Wall and prayed. And God heard the prayer, and Rommel was returned to Europe. So it's not something specific to what happens inside since 1948. This is like the way God does things, right? So that means that Zionism is just, you know, another structure, but has no difference. That doesn't change Judaism. Doesn't change the game. It should not be given extra significance. So that was that. Thank you very much. Hope it was clear. I'd be really happy to hear questions and comments, because I've presented this to people who do performance theory, and they had a lot of comments, but they had not much to say about the content of what I just said. So.